And of course, we're live streaming this open council meeting. Is there any declaration of interest foreshadowed by any elected member? If not, I'll keep moving along. Someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the last general council meeting. Councillor Gard, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So we can go straight down to corporate reports for decision. Single-use plastic product bans. Staff done a lot of work on this, very extensive report and commentary. Someone, shall we just get straight into a motion? Councillor Crossland, is a motion or a question? Motion.
I'll move as printed.
Thank you. Did you wish to speak to it?
Just very briefly. I think it's a good report and response by staff. I toyed with the idea of including the soy sauce cartons, but it seems the argument to hold fire. I was particularly keen on the doggy bags being included, as I put that up to council about 3 years ago, but it was poo-pooed. So it looks like this time it'll go ahead and we can change the dispensers to fit the bags.
Is that seconded, Councillor Gard? I wish to speak.
Yes, very briefly. Thank you, Your Worship. I think great work is being done here at large and certainly internally to us. I certainly would like to see in the processes the best benchmarking we can possibly do on a world scale, because there must be people ahead of us. I think we're certainly forerunning, but there must be people ahead of us, and to benchmark, make it a bit of a science in this area, I feel. It's the same with environment in general. I did toy a little bit with objecting to the soy containers. I think it's a silly part of our society that we've got to have little tiny sauce bottles when we don't. We could bring our own if we want it that badly, or just eat in. I think they were my main points. Commend the staff for bringing this forward the way they have.
Thank you. Any questions, opposition? Councillor Hull.
Thank you. I'm happy to support this recommendation, but I have some questions. Focusing on Marion, COVID has been a terrible escalation of use of plastic, not only by our organisation, but by just about everybody. But I'm just wondering whether the administration thinks we can do better. For example, the most recent event, the opening of the BMX track, the boxes that were served up had a plastic see-through top. Was that necessary? Can we actually go that extra step to ensure that we are genuinely living up to Councillor Hutchinson's motion?
So that's a question to staff. Who would like to answer that?
Through the chair, Alison Byrne, are you available to answer?
I can see Alison's name on the screen.
Through the chair.
Ms. Byrne, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, in response to the question about the plastic packaging, I think this ban will start to push some of those materials out of circulation statewide. So we'll see that increase over time as these progressive stages are implemented. At the BMX opening, it's possible that those boxes with the clear lining were actually a bioplastic lining. Not having done the catering for that event, I can't confirm exactly, but if we have a solid waste management system for those large events with a three-stream system that captures compostables, that will go a long way to reducing that waste to landfill.
Councillor Hull, question two.
Well, look, regardless of what we vote on here tonight, I'm more interested in what my role is with the Marion Council. And, whatever the
you
state...
You have another question.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering genuinely what we can do to actually make sure, because that's just one example. There's numerous examples. And I've raised this before, by the way, since that...
Councillor Hull, the broader question of what more we can do is a very worthy question.
Thank you.
But not strictly for this debate. It might be something that you want to bring forward as a forum discussion at some time, or you may have a motion to council at some time to call for a report. But strictly speaking, we're here to endorse the staff's commentary on the state government proposal. So if you could confine it to that scope, thank you.
Just taking your lead on that, can we just have this added as a question asked during the meeting?
Well, the question, the resolution's been moved and seconded. You're not really speaking in opposition to the motion, but you are permitted to ask factual questions, not rhetorical ones. You've had one pretty broad question. Do you have another question?
Well, just to follow through with your suggestion of actually giving this, the administration opportunity to bring this back as an answer, just like in the agenda, we've got items to get to where you've asked questions and it's in the agenda and the answers are there. Can this be treated the same way?
So, all right, what is your question concisely?
Well, I've asked it three times now. How can the organisation...
Can we do better?
Can we do better? You know, with all of our events and functions...
All right, it's not the usual question on notice, but let us take it as a question on notice and then it will appear in the next agenda.
Thank you.
How can we do better with our environmental objectives, particularly in terms of products used at council events? Is that the direction you want to take, councillor, just to give it a little bit of specific aspect?
To live up to our policy, exactly.
All right. So just checking... staff have that. Yes, thank you. Thanks, Councillor Hull. Now, Councillor Vlaska, do you have a question?
Yeah, a couple of questions to do with plastic bags. First of all, what does this policy do in regards to the biodegradable plastic bags, particularly those that create a lot of microplastics as they degrade?
Ms. Byrne.
Thanks for the question through the chair. So there are two parts to the legislation and coming into effect, which is not part of this discussion paper, is the second stage banning, as Councillor Crossland mentioned, our dog waste bags, which are oxo-degradable bags. So this second phase of legislation, as subject to part of this discussion paper, is going to address the issues of microplastics from biodegradable bags because they are seeking to phase out through state legislation. The state government will ban the supply, distribution and retail of thicker plastic bags across the state. So that will then lead to alternatives being used.
I currently use the Glad bin liners that you can get, or you can use any company. I'm not being endorsed by them. What will happen with those? Are they going to still be available? And if not, what's going to be the proposed replacement?
I don't know for certain what the effects will be on all products available on supermarket shelves. There are conditions that will come through in the details of the legislation about what the plastic bags will be made of. That would be determined by the state government when they roll out their ban. I'm not sure what that means for bags that are part plant-based and part plastic-based because there are a lot of different products available on the market at the moment. So this legislation should lead in the direction of starting to phase some of those products out of circulation.
Thank you. All right, Councillor Clancy.
Hello, I was just wondering if we could add to the letter from Council that we do support the ban of soy sauce fishies. There are alternatives. You can have a bottle of soy sauce at your desk at work, or if you're taking away, you can ask them to apply it directly to your sushi on the way out. I think there is a long list of plastics we could ban, and this is a very short one, so let's try to adopt them all, or at least support adopting them all.
So Councillor Clancy's moving an amendment. I wonder if staff have a suitable form of wording for that amendment. Obviously building, so where it says at the end of the motion as moved, subject to any amendments made in the meeting, that could say subject to approval of a ban on soy sauce plastic containers being included. Ms. Meritz, that sounds coherent. Councillor Clancy, you're happy with that?
Yeah, just as long as it's clear, like they are already included in the proposal, just that we support the banning of them. It currently says we don't think there's suitable alternatives, so we don't support the ban.
Maybe where it said subject to approval, that should be subject to council approval. So subject to council endorsement of the ban, etc. Ms. Meritz, because I mean that just makes it clear, Councillor Clancy, that we're talking about the submission, not the discussion paper itself, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
So Ms. Meritz, would you like to read that back to us? Or are you going to show us? Very good.
Yes, I have just shared the screen. But if you cannot see that.
Yes, I can. Well, I can.
Okay.
Process of submission, etc. Subject to council endorsement of the ban on soy sauce plastic containers being included. I think that sums it up. So, Councillor Clancy, if you're happy with that, you have spoken to an extent. Did you have any further remarks?
No, that's it. Thank you.
So now I ask for a seconder, but it must come from somebody who hasn't yet spoken in the debate. I suppose if we say that you had, Councillor Telfer, I'll take you as a seconder.
Have a comment.
No, then I put the amendment immediately unless there's a point of order.
A question, Mr. Mayor?
Councillor Hull, is it a question about the wording of the amendment?
Yeah, look, it's an excellent suggestion by Councillor Clancy. I just wonder about the wasabi and the ginger that you can never get open. Councillor Gard's laughing.
Councillor Hull, we're opening up another, whether it's wasabi, ginger or a can of worms, I'm not sure, but it could go on and on. Councillor Clancy's picked out soy sauce containers for the specific reason that the staff draft excluded approval of the ban on those items at this time. So that's why it's confined in that way.
It's just in my dumpling box, there's more than just the soy sauce.
I'll ask Ms. Byrne to comment then on that question.
Thank you, through the chair. So at this point, we're responding to the items proposed in the discussion paper, which specifically listed the plastic soy sauce fish. The reason it's not been promoted as something to include at this stage is for the reason sort of along the lines of what Councillor Hull's alluding to with other sachets also being in the container anyway. We have the outer packaging. There's a whole bunch of different packaging items, which makes it tricky anyway. It's very unlikely that any of those packaging items could be recycled because you've got a sachet, the soy sauce fish, and then the sushi container itself. So that was part of the thinking behind leaving it off at this point to allow for other packaging options to be available on the market. The legislation at this point isn't targeting condiment packaging in general. I hope that answers the question and offers clarification.
Thank you for that. It comes back to the fact that we're commenting on the state government's discussion paper. So does any of that, Councillor Clancy, cause you to reword your amendment or not?
No, I'm happy with that. I mean, I'd like to list a whole range of things, but we can only comment on what's been asked of us.
Yep, fair enough. So the amendment has been moved and seconded to extend our approval to the soy sauce plastic container aspect. And I'll immediately ask for a vote on that. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. So it is carried by majority. And now we proceed with the rest of the debate. If somebody hasn't spoken in the debate, they might speak for or against. If there are no others, I'll simply put the motion as amended. All those in favour? So, sorry, I point of order against myself, I should go back to Councillor Crossland to have a reply on the motion as amended if he wishes.
Thank you. I can see the thinking, and as I said at the beginning, it's a shame that we couldn't find an alternative for the soy sauce fish capsule, but in the Green Adelaide report, they're not going to really recommend it anyway. We're already recommending that we include bread tags, which Green Adelaide, again, aren't recommending is included. But I thought the staff's argument for bread tags was valid and might get it across the line. But we've got a report that Green Adelaide's saying no to soy sauce. Staff saying no to soy sauce. I thought it would be more prudent to support the experts and staff on this, but happy to completely go against both.
Very well. Now I can ask for a vote on the motion as amended. Those in favour, raise your hands. Those against, raise your hands. That is carried by majority. Thank you. So now we go to page 20. No, we don't. Go to page 77 of the agenda. The ALGA, National General Assembly of Local Government. Not aware of any motions on the books, but looking for expression of interest as to who may wish to go along. I saw Councillor Crossland's hand up. What did you want to say, Councillor?
I was just going to suggest we suspend standing orders, and if people want to put their hand up or recommend something, at least we can discuss it rather than...
Motion is that standing orders be suspended from Councillor Crossland. Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor, all those in favour? All those against? That is carried by majority. So now we can sort of freely ask for any nominations who would like to attend the event. I've got Councillor Hull, I've got Councillor Clancy.
I'm not nominating, Mr. Mayor. I have a question.
Okay, so when I ask for nominations and you put your hand up, you can understand why I might have misunderstood that. So Councillor Clancy, you're expressing a nomination to attend. Councillor Hull had a question.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I hope that any motions that we do come up with tonight actually do get reasonable respect from this body, because last year it went nowhere and they really didn't give an explanation.
Yeah, I think that's probably more a matter of debate later on. We're just trying to sort out nominations, orders.
The question I have is that if anybody actually is successful in going to this, will it be in order for any elected member during the election to draw the public's attention to the fact that ratepayers' money is being used to send these people to Canberra? As was the case last election.
I'll probably rule that out as irrelevant. We're just trying to work out a nomination.
No elected members should not feel persecuted.
Order. You're right. Elected members should not feel persecuted. I'll just ask staff whether, in fact, any notices of motion have come to staff from elected members.
Through the chair, no, we did put a call out and ask for motions to be sent to us by last Friday, the 4th of February, and nothing was received.
Thank you. Now, I've had an expression of interest from Councillor Hutchinson, the Deputy Mayor, as well. Ms. McKenzie, can you advise if in the past we've sent multiple delegates?
Through the chair, yes, we did send multiple delegates. This was some time ago now, but there has been a year where I think we sent potentially three or four councillors at one time.
And just remind me, did we send anyone last year?
Yes, Matt Schilling.
Schilling went at some point.
Yep, Matt went last year. He had been nominated to go the previous year, but obviously it was cancelled because of COVID that year. So went in.
That's the one. I thought there was a year when we didn't have someone, so that was 2 years ago. Okay. So I don't know if there's a view. I mean, normally you'd probably, I don't know if there's a suggestion that you would choose as the voting delegate, give any preference to Deputy Mayor, but he's not here to speak for himself. Councillor Clancy, do you have any view about whether you would wish to be the delegate, the voting delegate, or proxy voting delegate? Do you have any view on that?
Perhaps proxy voting delegate. It's probably more appropriate the deputy mayor be the delegate.
All right. So that it sounds like that would be an appropriate motion if there aren't any other people putting their hands up. Councillor Hull?
Just a genuine question. Will the deputy mayor make time to actually attend this? So his attendance record going by the annual report.
Well, order. If I mean, he has expressed verbally to me that he's interested in being nominated as a delegate, and I've taken that to mean voting delegate. We have in place a proxy if he doesn't or can't attend. I don't think it's appropriate to go into his voting history for over how many years, whatever. So Councillor Schilling has a question or comment.
Yeah, just a comment with regards to the voting delegate. The way they did it last year, and I believe they did it a few years leading up to that, was that you just got a remote control and you sat at your desk. You don't have to do anything. So really, if Councillor Hutchinson left to go for a meeting, he just hands the remote to Councillor Clancy or the staff that are there. It's nothing really formal.
No, but nonetheless, we must formalise it if we're going to go that way. So as chair, I can simply call on the standing orders again. So I do that and invite members to move, someone to move. Clause one, I'll come back to Councillor Schilling in a moment. I can see his hand up. Clause one is noting report. We don't need two and three. We've got clause four, which would be Councillor Hutchinson as the voting delegate, Councillor Clancy to attend. Councillor Schilling, you happy to move that way? Yes.
Yeah, happy to move that way. And I just have a question as well.
Oh, okay. Yes, sure. Go ahead.
I'm assuming a staff member will attend with councillors. What staff member will attend?
Management. Who's willing to make the sacrifice?
It's briefly crossed my mind that it may be of relevance. We haven't given any real consideration, or we haven't made a decision. So I'd like to really take that on notice so we can think whether it's appropriate and of benefit too.
Fair enough. It is some way down the track to make that decision. So that's the best answer you'll get, Councillor Schilling. Happy to move on? Yep. Is that seconded? Councillor Masika, thank you. Unless there's any further discussion, put all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by a majority. Thank you. So we go on, and we better, sometimes we do these on block, but I think we better take them one by one. Page 90, we've got the IMT update, and a question that I raised when the agenda came out was just, who is the IMT? Because I thought the report was far from self-explanatory when it came to that. And after all, these reports are for the public as well as general counsel. So it turns out that 2 years ago we were, as elected members, given a list of the various managers on the IMT, and it's sort of senior management plus the risk and governance people, more or less. But I've just thought that was worth clarifying if any members of the public are listening. Now, Councillor Schilling was considering an amendment or moving it in an amended fashion. A few members might be concerned that decisions which run against the community grain or decisions which elected members wouldn't have endorsed might be made by the IMT. Obviously, the IMT would be on the spot and with current information, etc. But how, perhaps I could ask Mr. Harrison or Ms. McKenzie, how do we resolve that dilemma as an organisation?
Sure. Thank you. If I can, please, through the chair, just respond to that and respond more generally. So yes, the configuration of IMT is all of the ELT, so general managers, CFO, manager of Office of Chief Executive and People and Culture. And we also have representation from the risk as well as media, as well at the moment, we have a permanent health and safety welfare representative offline that's managing a lot of the COVID response work as well. And also finally, we have Merrin Fife present as part of the INT that gives very good insight in relation to service delivery impacts, responsible for community centres, libraries and so forth. We are operating, or have been operating, twice a week, Tuesday morning and Thursday mornings, 8:30, 8:45. And we've just this week cut back to once a week with a standby for the Thursday meeting as well. And we cover, if I can just suggest, principally six key areas. One is safety and wellbeing from the staff's perspective, which has involved consideration of the mandated vaccination policy. It's also included alternative work arrangements to ensure that we can maximise operations during isolation periods and quarantine. We've also considered a key topic area of service delivery, and if I can just pause on that one and come back to that one, just particular for Councillor Schilling's question and maybe the interest of other elected members as well. We've also considered at the moment RAT testing through a surveillance provision and the impact on management of major events, public events, and also possibly general council meetings in the future if we do move back to more of a hybrid face-to-face type model. At the same time, general business, and importantly, the operations of council from good governance perspective as to how we go about that. If I please can come back to service delivery, we consider at each and every meeting, certainly for the last couple of months, the impact on our services in the sense of Marion Outdoor Pool, community centres, libraries, front-to-counter service provision, operations, and all other aspects of where we need to maintain business continuity service delivery. People would be aware at the moment, if you undertake a test PCR, for example, you could get immediate notification via text messaging through SA Health that you must immediately isolate, whereby we have to exit somebody from the workplace immediately. And we also then have to look at backfill or rostering implications through that process. We're currently, or have been, considering the ability to move people across portfolios, so at all times we can maximise service delivery to its full extent and we don't have to find ourselves operating with reduced hours or potentially closing service delivery or centres. So we're looking at the most agile way to look at contingency planning for backfills for that particular purpose. The only impact we've had to date has been some small shortening of hours at two community centres. And very fortunately for us is that participation in some cases has actually been bordering on zero or very small numbers because of hesitancy about going out in public by some of our participants, some of them very vulnerable people in our community. So we've been fortunate that we have been able to a very small extent, as a exception only, look at reducing some hours because of rostering capability. In the main, everything has been operating well. So Marion Outdoor Pool, despite the fact they've been very much hit by positive and isolation cases, we've been able to maintain full operations of Marion Outdoor Pool, libraries, front of counter service delivery at the same time as well. Can I please suggest at this point that the IMT, because it is meeting so frequently and we do cover off on these issues literally on a daily basis, we need to be very agile and very responsive to making operational decisions that impact on staffing, rostering and backfilling, sometimes on the spot. We don't have options to necessarily plan ahead of time. We just need to very much react on the spot and try and do the best we can to ensure that we're maintaining the highest level of customer service we possibly can. And hence, I would suggest for the consideration of elected members that the ability for the IMT and the Chief Executive to respond accordingly only on a very temporary basis, on a short-term basis, that's probably where it sits best to make those decisions so we can capitalise on reducing the impact to the community for very short-term intervals. if it was the case that we looked at a more prolonged arrangement, I would always provide immediate advice through the mayor, and I would also then look to provide advice to all elected members in a reasonable fashion as I could in relation to any service delivery impacts. We spoke about it at length at 8:30 this morning, and we're of the view currently we are maintaining service delivery largely to a full extent with some minimal limitations, and hopefully, fingers crossed, with the reduced reporting numbers only, not so much the numbers in our community, we're hoping to continue in that vein for the foreseeable future as restrictions do continue to be considered on a fortnightly basis by the Premier. Scheduled for Fridays, this coming Friday will be one of those, as best we can determine at the moment. So that's a brief summary. Happy to take any questions, but we certainly are very much acutely aware of, at all times, maintaining the high levels of service that we've become accustomed to provide, and we don't want to compromise service delivery in any way at all unless it is essential to do so.
Thank you for the brief summary. Sorry, we don't have time for the long one. Now, Councillor Schilling, I know you had some concerns that were quite rightly expressed prior to the meeting to us. Did you want to ask any questions about what Mr. Hazen's come forward with? Or
Yeah, that would be good. Look, thank you, Mr. Harrison. I've got no concerns with what you're saying. Maybe my wording of my extra point needs to be refined better. My point is more about us being made aware and us making the decision if a policy is put in place to stop certain members of our public accessing our facilities and buildings, etc. So more around mandates than anything. And I understand we've all got different views on that, but if that is something that IMT is going to be making, I think any access for a community member to a service needs to come to council. It should not be made by this group.
Yes, Mr. Harrison.
Thank you. Absolutely. If it is the case, if I could cut to the chase, I think, if we were looking to enforce people demonstrating vaccination to access our services, I would deem that as a very significant departure from our current service provision arrangements, and that must come through the elected members for consideration. That's not something we could do or should do unless there was an extreme set of circumstances which I could not envisage in the workplace. So yes, absolutely, you have my undertaking that that would have to, must come back through elected members if we were to look to put something like that in place.
And Mr. Harrison, from what you said, the other question occurred to me. You said that, you know, this is on a short-term or temporary basis, but what is there to, you know, restrict IMT in that respect? I mean, there's nothing in the motion recommended by staff tonight. Is there a point where it winds up dealing with COVID, or it's too soon to think about that?
I've suggested as recent as this morning, Mayor, that I would suggest that IMT may need to operate in its current format focused on COVID and the pandemic through to June this year as a way of trying to give some parameters, timeframes, so this just doesn't become an enduring, ongoing thing. So my suggestion this morning was let's focus on June or sooner. If we can wind it back and wind back some of the considerations so we move more into so-called business as usual, I'll look to do that at the first opportunity.
Okay. Well, would someone like to move a motion? So I don't know, Councillor Schilling, if you want to move it in an amended form or whether you would like to just try that, try your wording as an amendment, or whether
I'm happy to go with what's written, and I'm happy to move now that I've got that undertaking from Mr. Harrison that if any decision with regards to mandates or etc. were to come, that are to come to the chamber, I'm happy with that. We've got him on the public record, so I'm happy to move as written.
Right, and any further comment? No, Councillor Masika to second the motion. Wish to speak, Councillor Masika?
Thanks so much, Your Worship. I would like to reinforce the words which Mr. Harrison has explained, the whole thing about the IMT. And I said, look, IMT is not a new thing. It has been there since the pandemic started. And when you look up the data where we are heading, we still have some new viruses coming. We have two viruses, variants, which of concern to WHO, and also we have two sub-variants of concern, which has been found up last week. So to be talking about winding up this IMT now, it will be premature. Probably we leave it until June, and see we see where things are heading. I'm quite happy to second the way it's, the motion, the way it's written.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against? And I'll put the motion, all those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we can go on to page 92, corporate CEO KPI report. Any questions, members? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, once again, community engagement, communications. You've got a question on notice in this very agenda on this very topic. However, the answer does not allude to the reference to that question. It could be on anything. It does not allude that you're asking that question in regards to community engagement. I'm just wondering whether we've had, if you've thought any more to the answer to your question, Mr. Mayor, and whether we are actually holding our CEO accountable for all significant community engagement and not just 26 chosen ones.
Well, Councillor Hull, I can tell you two things. One is that on page 94, we have there the original wording, as far as I can tell, of the KPI. So that was the one that was intended to cover all project-specific communications, not just major projects or business plan or whatever. And in relation to the question on notice, I'll take the answer on face value. And I think management have got the point that it is 100% or nothing, black and white KPI. All of the communications to the community about projects, whether it be a playground or an oval or a major project, should be timely and accurate. And that is a high standard, and that's what the elected members expect. So I think the message has got across. We also discussed it at the last review and selection committee meeting. So that was an opportunity for members to clarify intention with management, and I'm not expecting a problem to arise from it. But do you wish to direct that to management as well, Councillor Hull, or does that satisfy you for the moment?
Yeah, look, I'm pleased to hear that we might be getting somewhere with this, but in terms of the answer to your question, given the public are reading this, they've got to understand the context of that question. And as it's written, they wouldn't have a clue why you asked that question, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, well, that's a fair comment, but it comes a point where if we make our point, we then move on, and there are other issues to deal with.
If I may move on to my next question then.
Yes, please.
The item above it, the staff engagement. Now, there's three red lines there, two of which are actually below 40%. And some of them are actually critical areas, customer experience and engagement. These are our people, customer experience and engagement. These are our customers, and we're falling short in that area. Operations, another critical important.
Yep.
And city activation, like this is a dynamic area.
It's a very good question. It was specifically asked in the review and selection committee meeting so that we could get a detailed answer, and we did receive a satisfactory answer. It's appropriate to ask it in this forum, and perhaps I'd have to call on, unless Ms. Lynch is available, Mr. Harrison might be the one to answer. Thank you.
Certainly through the chair, and I seem to recall, even though it was a week ago, so hopefully my memory's not failing, I thought at the elected member forum, we also provided extensive detail on these three particular lines, as well as the review and selection committee. The customer experience and engagement, as well as the city activation, the explanation that was provided was that in both of those areas, we had significant vacancies, secondments and backfills at the point in time, that short period or that short window when people have an opportunity to respond through TeamGauge. And hence, the system is based on a posting in a technical sense of people in particular areas. Because those numbers were considerably down, there wasn't an ability to have the bodies, if you like, available to respond in the precise time frame. And I am confident that you'll see come January, February, because the HR situation has changed, that those numbers and participation will also change. Our operations, which is around about 94 to 96 staff at full establishment, is still, unfortunately, a manual operating system. It's not an automated technical response capability like the remainder of the City of Marion, and it does require a manual filling in of forms, which we are trying to adjust from a technical solution as well as a participation rate by the individuals so we can accurately get participation and accurately record responses at the same time. So operations is slightly different from the other two. We are aware that there are challenges in those three areas. Two of them will be corrected by filling of positions, which has been done. Operations is going to be a little bit more work in progress to get a more automated technical solution to get better responses in that area.
Thanks, Mr. Harrison. And just as a refinement for Councillor Hull and others, it was explained to us in the committee that, for example, leaving aside that issue about the operational outdoor workforce and the mechanics filling in the form, in an area with high turnover, the total number from whom the TeamGauge response is expected, say it's 14 at the beginning of the month, there might be staff who have been appointed but haven't arrived yet, or there might be staff who are still on deck but they're not actually working their final 2 weeks because they've put it in as holidays or something. So out of that 14, you might actually only have 6 people in the room and they might all fill it in, but it's less than 50%. So I'm making up the numbers, but just to give the idea. Before I come back to you, Councillor Hull, Councillor Gard's got a question.
Yes, Your Worship. Just on number 10, asset utilisation, I note that's down at 52%, and I'm guessing that a good part of that would be the influence of COVID. But I'm interested to know whether we have a handle on the revenue impact of that one factor in relation to asset utilisation.
Harrison, perhaps?
So if I can, please, once again, just make the point that it is about room hire, not necessarily full asset utilisation of assets as we deem them to be. So it is about room hire, and yes, we would suggest strongly, and the most predominant factor is a reduction in people using facilities room hire because of COVID, direction to stay home, hesitancy about going into public places with crowds and so forth. And I think we'll also expect to see that certainly through January, February and March at the same time. I would even suggest that in January, we might even see a further reduction than we're seeing with the 52% during that month in the holiday period too. So that is the situation very much. In relation to revenue, it will be a small reduction. I wouldn't expect it to be significant in any way whatsoever, but we will see a small reduction, which is comparable to the reduction we're seeing in actual utilisation.
Thank you.
And just like one of the other KPIs, that's one where the original intent was diverted slightly. The suggestion by staff was to look at room bookings on the computer, I think because it was easy to monitor, whereas the idea is we have neighbourhood centres, we have community halls, which we look after, we have community halls, which little committees look after, and the idea is to look at all of those to see how much they're being used. Do we have a hall out there that's only used 10 hours a week? Do we have neighbourhood centres that are only being used 10 hours a week? I mean, I don't think so, but the idea is to not only monitor but encourage use of all of those different types of facilities. So with a lot of these KPIs, they're a work in progress. All right, I'll come back to Councillor Hull. You've had two questions, Councillor. You've got one more. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just in regards to the CEO's explanation for these staff engagement figures, surely these figures are pro rata. In other words, they're a measurement of the staff at hand. Like if the staff are on annual leave or on sick leave, they can't answer. So surely this is an indication of the sample of staff that are actually at hand, not the ones that are off or away for whatever reason.
Perhaps not as simple as that. Mr. Harrison?
No, I don't think it is. I'm happy to get further clarity for you, Councillor, but my understanding is that it's worked on substantive FTE positions in a unit-by-unit structure. So if a person elects not to participate or a person isn't available to participate, then we miss out on capturing their involvement. I see Jess Lynch has come on board, who might be able to hopefully not contradict me, but I think that is the case in relation to there are limitations based on availability of people at the point in time that the TeamGage survey is actually open to the respective employees.
Ms. Lynch, are you able to clarify further? And we don't mind if you contradict the chair. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Yes, through the chair, I don't seek to contradict my chief executive, but certainly when we have, just to explain, when we have new employees join the organisation, they are added to the TeamGage tool at the time that they join the organisation. And the survey is issued in the first week of that month. When we take the figures at the end of that month, one unfortunate quirk of the system is that it would include in the total pool of numbers for that business area, employees who may also have exited the organisation within that month or who may also be on long-term leave. And at the point of time where this data was drawn from, which was the 31st of December, my understanding is with the two top business areas, we had some turnover in those business areas with new starters coming in and some employees departing the organisation, so out of the customer experience and the city activation areas. And so that has led to a lower response rate shown for those particular areas during that period. Because of confidentiality, we aren't able to draw out specifically who responded and who didn't, but that's my understanding when we've looked at the numbers, that that's the most likely explanation for the variation in those figures. Operations was a different set of circumstances. There was traditionally they have had some paper responses to that, to the survey that weren't entered during that time period. And certainly in my engagement with the business area, they will be shifting to a fully online response in subsequent surveys.
And if I can just make a comment again to round out the answers to Councillor Hull's questions. The good thing about KPI, so even though we've got the red lines there, the discussion has informed elected members and the public about these quirks in the organisation, the fact that the outdoor workers have been using a manual system. Why aren't they on some automated system? And in some areas, we've had high turnover. So that's good to know as well. So those things were explored in more detail in the committee. But they were good questions, Councillor Hull. Thank you. But we should move on now to actually note the report. Who'd like to do that? Mr. Councillor Masika? Moved. Any further comment? Seconded by anyone? Councillor Pryor, no further comment. If there aren't any more, then all those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we go to the questions on notice register. Again, I'll ask for any factual questions to begin with, if there are any. If not, then we, Councillor Hull.
I've already raised my concerns about your question, Mr. Mayor, but Councillor Gard asked a really good question about emergency service vehicles. And it strikes me as it's odd that they're basically consulted after the works are done. And those agencies have got to somehow monitor development applications around the states to actually work out whether there's an issue there or not.
All right, let's just test that, Councillor Hull, with management. Is Councillor Hull right in that understanding of it? And is that best practice? Who can answer that?
Mayor, I could answer that, but the person that's acting in my role, Matthew Allen, is with us tonight, and I'm just, yeah, Matt's here. Would you like to take that, Mr. Allen?
It refers back to the Oaklands Green.
Yeah, through the chair, there are design standards for medium rigid vehicles, which are emergency services vehicles around turning movements and allowing access. Those standards have been informed by emergency services, but they're not afforded the opportunity to contribute to each individual subdivision or land division. That would be quite an onerous task on emergency services.
Right. Do we simply have someone? Yes, Councillor?
I ask this question with an emphasis because Oaklands Green is going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, 5-6 stories in parts. And because of that, the Metropolitan Fire Service are buying quite expensive or trying to buy quite expensive firefighting appliances that can actually reach, in an aerial sense, to those multi-storey buildings. Those trucks are getting bigger and bigger.
Councillor Hull, I mean, this isn't the place to fully explore that. We're really just here to note that report. I'm not saying that isn't an important issue. What I would ask staff, whether it be Ms. McKenzie or one of the managers, Mr. Allen or someone else, what can a councillor such as Councillor Hull do about this issue if indeed emergency services vehicles are getting larger? Is there something that council should be doing, state government should be doing? What is the recommendation from management?
Through the chair, we could use this as a test with emergency services and consult with them about access and get their feedback. Also get a better understanding of what upgrade to vehicles they're proposing or considering.
Well, I don't think we need a motion necessarily for that, but I don't know. Either Mr. Harrison, would you like to write such a letter? Alternatively, the mayor could have one drafted and sent off. But probably coming from administration to get those facts might be appropriate, Mr. Harrison.
Happy for myself to seek some clarity, but could I please just suggest through the answers provided, I interpret the answer to be that we are compelled to build to the design standards and capacity for those vehicles when we go through these development processes. The emergency services have defined the requirements for their vehicles that we must adhere to when we go through development and ultimately construction. It's only by exception in the bushfire prone area that you consult on a case by case basis. So I would have thought that the framework is sound in the sense that we must comply with standards of widths to accommodate the vehicles, which has been defined by the emergency services. And I'm understanding from Mr. Allen, that's actually the process that we adopt and put in place. So I guess I'm strongly questioning as to whether anything more needs to be done other than accepting that there is sound processes and protocols in place to make sure those vehicles can have access through these sorts of development processes.
Well, the other aspect of the answer that's provided to us is that through the road opening and closing process, there's an opportunity for emergency services to comment. It doesn't. Why doesn't that resolve your issue, Councillor Hull?
Well, Mr. Mayor, this reminds me of that motion we sent off to the ALGA last year. And that was about the National Building Code in regards to a garage. And we all know that we're building garages right now that you can't get a car into. So, you know, I don't accept the fact that, oh, we've got standards and that's going to serve us well. It doesn't serve us well. And
Councillor Hull, so there's kind of two parts to it. One part of the answer is telling us that we have to build according to the standards. Now, you may doubt that these standards are sufficient, but the other part of the answer, just read it out, emergency services have the opportunity to comment during the advertising and public notification for the road closure process carried out by the Surveyor General, who publishes notice in the Government Gazette and the Advertiser. Now, I would have thought there would be someone in the ambulance service, the fire service, police service, who would actually monitor that. That would be their job. and they would check if roads are being closed to make it inappropriate for their vehicles. That would, at least in theory, that's how it should work. So the point is they do have the opportunity to comment. They're not commenting now when council has the opportunity to comment, but as we go through the process, they get the opportunity to comment. So why are you not satisfied with that?
I probably know too much about emergency services, along with Mr. Harrison, actually, being a former Safecom executive. I'd imagine that Councillor Crosland would probably have
it. Councillor Hull, the point is, if these emergency services are not taking the opportunity to comment when they have the opportunity, what is it to council to do anything about that? At a higher level?
Could I ask, what harm is there having Mr. Allen write that letter? Because I have every confidence that Mr. Allen will get to the bottom of this.
I think it's it might be better to test it as a motion, because it's not the, as Mr. Harrison suggested, the need isn't apparent from the answer provided to elected members this evening. So I suppose we could test it tonight as an amendment to the motion. So why don't we do that, Councillor Hull?
Yeah, I'm just trying on this item, Mr. Mayor. I don't see a motion.
On page 99, the recommendation to staff is that council notes the report. Questions taken on notice register.
I see. Sorry, I was. Yeah.
So I will let you move an amendment, which would be an additional clause, effectively, that administration right to emergency services.
Yeah.
So that they can comment on Oakland's Green road closures or something like that.
Look, this is not just picking on Oakland's Green, by the way. This is much bigger than Oakland's Green.
Then it maybe shouldn't be a motion done on the spot.
Exactly, and I think I'm happy to work with Mr. Allen and work out.
All right, you work on it offline, that's good. So now we just have a simple motion. Councillor Gard, did you have a question or are you going to move the motion?
Yes, just a question. Could we not identify, for the sake of being explicit, the reference to Oakland's Green in that answer? Because there's no...
Councillor Gard, if you look at the left-hand column, Oakland's Green road closures.
My apology, I didn't have my scroll bar far enough to the left.
I'm scrolling insufficiently all the time, don't worry. It looks like it's just a matter to move and second. Councillor Masika moved. Councillor Crosland...
Great question.
Go ahead.
Just a quick question for Mr. Allen, if I may. Just on the Lander Road traffic data, these speeds are even slower than 50k roads that I've seen. And in fact, on hills, I was surprised how low they were. Can you just comment on that? How come this is a 60k road with speeds lower than a 50k road?
Mr. Allen?
Through the chair, so those areas of Lander Road that have 85th percentile around the mid 50 kilometre an hour, they're usually quite built up. I know when I drive that section of road, I drive with a bit of caution. I have the foot over the brake, just wary that there could be traffic entering from driveways or as you approach Young and Lander Junction. It's well known for sort of people popping out into the junction unawares to other motorists. So I think generally, particularly locals, know and understand that you go through that section of Lander Road with a bit of caution.
In comparison, the road stats that you've done on roads, residential roads, built up roads in Hallett Cove, and I can think of a couple close to me, they had much higher speeds than this particular road.
I think the main difference with some of the local roads, so Lander Road has significant grade and high traffic volumes. I think when there's low traffic volumes, low vehicles parking on the road, we do see an increase in the traffic speeds.
Thank you.
All right, it's been moved by Councillor Seeker, seconded by, we'd like to second that we note Councillor Pryor. Thank you. Councillor Vallis, oh, sorry, that was a bit of a voting hand going up. All those in favour, raise your hand. Councillor Hutchins has just left the meeting, so that is unanimous. And now we come to the we call them cover confidentiality motions for the three remaining items. Before we go into confidence, is there anyone who wants me to take these one by one, or shall we take them on block? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, obviously the CEO review, that's confidential, always has been. The other item should be confidential. But I'd like to have an explanation as to why the BMX has got to be confidential.
Yes, you may not have seen, that's a good question. Perhaps before we go into moving motions about this, we'll have an answer to that. An answer was sent around to elected members this morning by Mr. Marwee, but you may not have seen that. Councillor Hull went around to all members explaining the reason to go into confidentiality. Mr. Harrison, you're probably best placed to answer that.
Thank you, Mayor, and through the Chair, obviously. Right at this moment, as recent as this afternoon, some hours ago, and we'll continue this week, we're in discussions to finalise an assessment of needs for the track, and also that will involve commercial discussions in and around responsibility, cost and liability discussions, hence the need for this to be treated in confidence.
So, Mr. Mayor, what the CEO is suggesting is that this could end up as a litigious situation?
No, I think that the particular reference in the Local Government Act that covers the situation is that open discussion could be contrary to council's commercial interests. You could be costing ratepayers money by having an open discussion about such matters.
That's all very good, Mr. Mayor, but it also is not an excuse to cover the mistakes of a local government.
Well, I agree. Mistakes of local government is certainly not a reason in the Local Government Act for confidentiality, but I suppose you've heard the justification given by the Chief Executive. You may or may not agree with it, so perhaps we'll take that vote separately. Before we go to, well, Councillor Telfer was next.
All right, so I was going to move the basketball be considered in confidence.
All right, would you like to include the CEO remuneration review as well?
Yes, I am happy to include those two cover reports, confidentiality.
Yeah. All right, that's moved on block. Councillor Crossland, I've just come to you. It's a question.
Yeah, I had a question re the basketball. Why, when it's so far down the track and we've had no community engagement, no stakeholder engagement, is all this report in confidence? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, at the moment, we're talking about the discussion that we're going to have. We're not talking about whether the reports or appendices are to be in confidence. That happens later. But if there's to be any discussion at whatsoever about costs, et cetera, then normally we would go into confidence for the discussion.
But when we've had discussions on other projects like the Merino Hall, Cove Sports Club, the designs, everything's been out there. We've gone out to community consultation well before we get to this stage. I don't get why this is different.
Okay, I'll turn to which manager would like to respond. Is it Mr. Lyons or Mr. Harrison? Mr. Lyons.
Thank you. Through the Chair, we did get some direction in the December General Council meeting to go and do some further design and investigation work on a proposal. We've done that. It's a report that's been submitted, and you've seen it, that includes a lot of costing information and some commercial information. And in the first instance, it's our recommendation to consider this in confidence. But then what gets released after that would be up to council to discuss.
All right. Councillor Crossland, I'll just ask you, did you want to test each of the cover reports separately as a procedural question? Sorry, you've just muted yourself. Sorry.
Look, I listened to what Mr. Lyons say. Look, I'm not particularly happy with the way this has progressed, the way that we're keeping stakeholders and the public out of this sort of project altogether. But unfortunately, the report has been written now in a way in which it does make it difficult. But we have repeatedly said that reports seem to be written in a way that prevents us from releasing them, which isn't very helpful.
All right. Comes back to Councillor Telfer's motion then, which is in relation to basketball and the CEO remuneration review. Is it seconded that we discuss those in confidence? Councillor Hutchinson, any opposition other than what's been mentioned? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, after listening to Councillor Crosland, I think he's got a good point, and I've got a long-standing position on this, as you know, over many months. And we have reached that pointy point where if it goes too much longer, we're locked in. And once again, we've got a community engagement issue. We don't seem to be learning from recent misadventures with community engagement about removal of rose gardens, the installation of traffic managed devices. We're on the path to making that mistake again, I'm not sure what we've got to fear from the community knowing what we've got planned for that major project. At the moment, they know nothing about it, nothing at all, except for the basketball people.
Are there any others in favour of the confidential discussion? Councillor Gillespie?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty straightforward. The discussion has to be in confidence based on what's in the report. We can, you know, make as much noise about it as possible. Once we have that discussion, we can then decide what the community, should know about as far as what isn't critical to stay in confidence as far as figures and bits and pieces. So I think really having the debate, you know, pseudo debating the actual issue of whether, you know, this is something that people like or not, it's not actually relevant. So let's have that discussion. Let's flesh out the arguments. And then at the end of it, whatever we decide, we can then decide the information that's appropriate that won't get us into any problems because it's commercial confidence.
Any other speakers against? And I'll put the motion that the basketball and CEO remuneration be dealt with in confidence initially. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried by a majority. So we move on to the cover report.
Division, please, Mr. Mayor.
A division is called by Councillor Hull. So on those two items, would members in favour of having a confidential discussion please raise their hand? I see on the screen Councillors Telfer, Masika, Clancy, Valescu, Duncan, Pryor, Hutchinson and Gard. You can put your hands down, please. Those against, raise your hand. They are Councillors Schilling, Crossland and Hull. I think that accounts for all councillors, Ms. McKenzie. So the motion is carried. We now turn to the cover report in relation to the BMX facility. Would someone like to move that we go into confidence to discuss that issue for the reasons Mr. Harrison has outlined? Councillor Schilling. Seconded Councillor Pryor. Any opposition? Councillor Hull.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Unless there's something that comes to light in the advice we're given that suggests that we're going down that hole that you explained would be perilous for the citizens, I'm not convinced that this is a good move, because there's a lot of public interest about this, a lot of coverage, and my questions that I've put forward to the administration should be answered. Lickety-split.
Councillor Hull, I can address that issue. Others may or may not be aware. Councillor Hull has supplied written questions on notice. The meeting procedures, not just with this council but with others, mean that they must be submitted in a certain amount of time prior to a council meeting. It is perfectly legitimate for them to go on the agenda of the next general council meeting. They were not lodged in time for this particular general council meeting. It is, of course, possible to ask questions without notice, and that would, the opportunity would occur when the topic is raised, as we're about to do. So I think that covers off on those points, Councillor.
Well, Mr. Mayor, in the absence of having any answers to my questions, satisfactory answers anyway, I can't support this going behind closed doors.
Very well. Any others in favour of the motion? Then I'm not sure there's a need for reply. I'll simply put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried by a majority.
Division, please, Mr. Mayor.
Division is called by Councillor Hull. So if you could please raise your hands again, if you're in favour of having the confidential discussion for the reasons Mr. Harrison outlined. I see on the screen Councillors Telfer, Masika, Clancy, Velescu, Duncan, Pryor, Schilling, Crossland and Hutchinson and Gard. You may put your hands down, all those against the motion, Councillor Hull. So the motion is carried. And so we now conclude the open part of the meeting, and for the reasons set out in the agenda, we go into confidence. My computer says 7:44. I suggest we come back in about 3 minutes, because we must log on to the confidential meeting on the agenda. So let's make it 3 minutes, 7:47 by my computer. So we leave this meeting, people, and we rejoin the other one. You should have the link there.